Hello and welcome to Beyond Back Page on Neo FM with myself, Patrick Donoghue. My guest on the show today is Simon Cooper. Simon writes for the Financial Times and has written several books. His most recent one is entitled Barca, the inside story of the world's greatest football club. And I'm delighted to say that Simon is joining me on the line. Simon, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Pleasure to be here.
So, Simon, you talk about in your book, it charts the remarkable rise of Barcelona, the Cruyff era, the Guardiola era, and near the end of the book, you go up to the modern day when things are starting to decline with Messi leaving. Did you envisage, I was looking at the league table today, and Barcelona sixth in the table, way off the top place. Did you envisage when writing the book and that things would have turned out so badly for Barcelona at present?
Well, it dawned on me while I was writing. So when I began the book, it was early 2019. I'd been there in February 2019. They'd opened all the doors for me. I thought, wow, I should write more than just an article. I should write a book. So I said, if I come back, and write a book, will you keep opening doors? And they said, yeah. And at the time, it really did seem still like world's best football club. They were heading to win the Spanish League. Later that spring, they beat Liverpool 3-0 in the Champions League semis. You'd have said, well, they'll get to the final and then they'll win it. So, aging team, it seemed pretty brilliant. But then when they lost 4-0 at Anfield, a lot of people remember that in May 2019. And that's really when it started to dawn on me and lots of people, gosh, there's something badly wrong here. And so over the next couple of years, as I was researching the book and making more visits to Barcelona, I realized, I'd planned to tell the story of the rise to greatness, but I ended up telling the story of the rise and fall. And the book's subtitle now is actually The Rise and Fall of.
And how do you think there's going to be a ropey few years for Barcelona? I'm a Man United supporter, and I can see parallels with what has happened with Man United and what may be coming down the line. How do you envisage it looks like Barcelona won't be taking part in the knockout stages of the Champions League when it restarts and are outside the Champions League places at the moment. Do you envisage a kind of ropey few years coming up for Barcelona?
Well, in fact, becoming Man U is sort of the benign scenario. So, I spoke to people up and down the club, and a lot of the business executives particularly would say, well, when Messi leaves one day, we probably will become less successful. So these are the great days. It's probably going to end. But look at Manchester United. After Ferguson left, they've won nothing. But they still are one of the world's three richest clubs. They, financially at least, are in very good shape and still buying great players. So if we become Manchester United, that's not so bad. Now, the thing is that United, still function very well as a revenue-generating business, and they don't have debt other than what they owe to their own owners, the Glazers. But Barcelona is a different story. I mean, the debt, I make it now something like they're going to borrow something like 3 billion, have borrowed 3 billion euros in total, because they're about to start building a new stadium, which will cost 1.5 billion. So they have this biggest debt, really, of any sports club, I think, in the history of the world. And as you say, they're not going to be in the Champions League. They're much less attractive to sponsors now. So I don't see how they can begin to pay back this debt. So the logic is that they just won't be able to buy good players anymore, that the good players they have, like Pedri or Frenkie de Jong, will be sold. And, then you become sort of the number 4 or 5 club in Spain on a permanent basis. That's a very possible scenario.
Yeah, and the book has absolutely brilliant access. You mentioned they opened the doors and you got great access and great stories. And one of the things that have been central to Barcelona's success story is the academy. And it looks like you mentioned there that they mightn't be able to buy, well, they won't be able to buy players. So what is the academy going to be more important? And more importantly, is there players coming through that academy that can take their places in the first team?
Well, I mean, luckily, for the first time in a decade, really, there are some excellent players coming out of the academy. Nico, Gavi, and Sulfati, when he's fit, are becoming really significant, exciting players in the first team. And the problem is that, you know, can you keep these guys? If they really start becoming stars, you're already seeing Bayern Munich and the likes of Bayern sniffing around Barca's best players, knowing that this is a wounded animal and you can, you know, they might be under pressure to sell cheap. Do Pedri, who's a player they bought for 5 million, who's become, you know, the best sort of teenager of the day, does he really want to spend the next few years of his career at a club that might not even be playing in the Champions League, might not even be competing for the Spanish title? Mm. I mean, if you're a second tier club, you will struggle to hang on to first tier players. So yes, the academy is finally producing again, but you know, the other problem they have is that the whole world copied Barca's academy. Mm. And so you see that in the last few years, even England and Germany, you know, countries that traditionally didn't produce that many light-footed passing footballers, Barca-style players, are producing them. So if you look at English players like Phil Foden or Raheem Sterling, I mean, they could be Barcelona players. Mm. And so the tragedy of Barca is everybody copied them. And when everyone copies you, you lose your unique selling point.
Mm. And one of the central character in the book is, of course, Johan Cruyff, whose influence, even in modern day football, is just phenomenal. But you make the point in the book, when he joined Barcelona as a player, the Barcelona that even the city of Barcelona and the club, it was a very, very different to what Barcelona was in the kind of at the glory days of, say, Guardiola. It was a really, really very different club and city.
Yeah, I mean, really, the book starts in 1973 when, you know, this rundown city, grey buildings, there's an industrial port right where the water starts, so there's no beach. Really, a somewhat depressing place. And in this fascist dictatorship, you know, Franco in 1973 is still the dictator of Spain, and Barcelona buy the guy who's then the best player in the world, Johan Cruyff, who arrives from the best team in the world, Ajax. So he's really taking a huge step back, and it's amazing to see the rise of both the city and the club over subsequent decades. And a lot is, as you say, due to Cruyff. I would say he and Leo Messi are the two main characters of the book. And Cruyff is really, he's the most interesting man in modern football. I mean, I grew up in Holland, so I'm biased, but I've sort of been following him for 40 years. And this is the guy who invented modern football. So if you look at teams like Manchester City or Bayern Munich or Italy, that kind of high press, fast passing, overlapping players, we play in the other team's half, our centre backs are on the halfway line. That kind of best football of 2022 is what Cruyff and the Ajax coach Rinus Michels invented in Ajax, which was then a sort of tin pot semi-pro club in Amsterdam in the late 60s. So he saw the future and it worked, and he brought it to Barcelona and he made them the best club in the world. And he was the guy who made the Masia, the academy, a place that produced these brilliant passing footballers like Xavi, Iniesta and Messi, who came through after his era. So Messi arrives in Barcelona as an individualist, and Barcelona, he's the best individualist, and Barcelona turns him into also the best collectivist passing Cruyffian player. So he's the two in one. So yeah, if you want to say who made Barca, it's Cruyff, it's Johan Cruyff.
Yeah, and the manager, his time as a manager, it was relatively short, and I find remarkable, like, that was his last major job, but it was a really, really influential time as manager. He won them the European Cup for the first time. So it really was the start, that, I suppose, in a European sense, it was the start of Barcelona being a superpower in the European football.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to the Barcelona before Cruyff, before 1973, it's a second-ranked club. It's, say, like Newcastle United. You know, you're a regional power and people in your city are big fans, but you don't really win much. I mean, before Cruyff, they hadn't even won the Spanish title in 13 years. They'd never won the European Cup. And so it's with him, you know, he comes in and he says, right, we're going to be number one because obviously the place where I am is going to be number one. I mean, he was a very bloody-minded, difficult man. And he actually did make them number one. So, yeah, I mean, the history of the club divides into two parts. And so since 1973 until, say, 2019 are the years of brilliance, the years of beauty, you know, that fans who lived through them will never forget. Actually, more precisely, 1992 to 2019. Mm-hmm. 1992 is when they win the Champions League, their first on the crack. And so now we might be going back to the old Barcelona, which is a kind of, you know, club with huge internal conflicts and maybe a club that doesn't win much, going back to the bad old days.
Mm. And Messi was the central figure in the latter period that's covered in your book, and it's remarkable. You really, really kind of talk about Messi's influence. But I'd imagine when people talk about Ronaldo now at Man United, I would say he's a lot more vocal. But you make the point that Messi, he's not very vocal, but still within when he was with Barcelona, he had a kind of massive influence, and it was just a look or that would kind of, people would know Guardiola or the other players would just know what he was thinking by just seeing an expression on his face. So he had a massive influence within the club without actually saying an awful lot. Would I be right in saying that?
Yeah, I mean, when I began the book, I thought, you know, there's nothing really to say about Messi as a person. He doesn't have a personality. And how wrong I was, because as I began to speak to people inside Barca, including people who worked with Messi for decades, I realized everyone here is terrified of him. Because, yeah, he didn't used to talk much. He's begun talking a lot more. You know, he's become sort of more able to use his power through words than when he was young. But every day people at the club thought, what does Leo want? And so every decision made by, you know, the coach or the directors, every player they bought, every coach they hired, every tactical change, it was always, will Leo like this? And if Leo didn't, you know, which he might indicate with a glance, then the guy was out. So Zlatan Ibrahimovic comes in 2009, scores in each of his first five games, a brilliant player, preeminent centre forward of the day. And then, you know, Guardiola realises Messi isn't happy. Guardiola forces Messi to speak, you know, which is very difficult. He encourages, gets him to speak. And Messi says, look, I cut him from the right and I go to the middle. And when I get to the middle, I don't want this massive, great Swede standing in my way calling for the ball. And Guardiola realises with horror, this guy Zlatan, who we've just bought for tens of millions, he's got to go because Leo doesn't want him. And so that's the way it was. Messi was the power within the club.
Yeah, and within the book, what struck me was the brilliant insight into modern football, and it got me thinking. You were talking about Messi moving over when he was really, really young, and it just seems to me he lives in such a bubble. And you relay a story about Cavani and he'd just been surrounded by young fans, and it's just a real crazy experience that players go through. It's like they've no way, fans are not relaying to them as ordinary people. So in looking at the lives of footballers, do you have a degree of sympathy for them? Because it just seems to be that they really, really live in a bubble, and it's probably not of their choosing, because they'd like to be able to mingle with ordinary fans a lot more. But I guess they have to be on their guard so much with the era of the smartphone and everything. So I suppose the question is, do you have a sympathy for the modern footballer in this era?
I have great sympathy, and I think that the fact that they're multimillionaires doesn't diminish my sympathy, because, you know, to judge people's happiness only by how much money they have seems to be very primitive. And I think their lives are actually they're sort of prisoners in a way, because whenever you go out, people are coming up to you taking selfies, which is very irritating and boring if it happens like, you know, 15 times on the way to the shop. And they also, their privacy has been invaded. So you're talking to someone in the restaurant, maybe the people at the next table are recording your conversation on their phones, not going to put it out on social media. You are out in town, maybe with someone you shouldn't be out with, and you're photographed. And so you just become what they end up doing is they just end up being at home all the time. You know, they have these massive mansions and you just sit there and you can't really go out and you play video games. But more and more, actually, they think they read books. This is the most educated generation of footballers in history. So, yeah, I think they really are victims of their circumstances. And they're also separated from the rest of us by the money they earn. They know that there's lots of people hanging around them who want to kind of dip into their money, people pretending to be their friend or pretending to be their girlfriend who are really after their money. And so they become very suspicious of ordinary people. And I think that many of them actually yearn to connect with the rest of us, do the things that the rest of us do, you know, go out in the morning for a coffee, walk down your local street. They'd like to do those kinds of things, chat to your neighbors without people, you know, kind of behaving in a super weird way, but they can't. And it's our fault, not theirs.
Yeah, it is really fascinating, celebrity culture. Like it's just remarkable that they can't actually do ordinary things. Like I think it was it Wayne Rooney or someone, they can't go to a supermarket. They're afraid. It is really, really just so surreal, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, I read Wayne Rooney's biographies once, so nobody else had to. But it's actually quite touching. I mean, he said, look, if I go to the supermarket, this is when he'd moved from Everton to Manchester United, half the people are shouting at me, you know, you're a traitor, you left Everton. And other people are, you know, offering me out for a fight because they're Liverpool fans, or they're kind of swarming all over him because they're United fans. And, you know, if you want to be a normal person, it's impossible. And then you're abused all the time in the media. If you play one bad game, you know, people say, oh, he earns all this money and he played badly. And, you know, your private life is exposed constantly. You have to warn everyone you know, don't start idly chatting about me because next thing you know, it's going to be trending on social media. It's just a really difficult life.
I might ask you, Simon, just before I let you go, I saw you posted on Twitter a few weeks ago that you have a new book coming out, Chums. It's how a tiny cast of Oxford Tories took over the UK. And I was just reading it up on the book and it just sounds fascinating. And even it's very relevant because today there was another stormy encounters in the House of Commons. Do you mind just telling us a little bit about that book? I think it's coming out in April. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, it's very different from the Barclay book. This is really a book about how today's British elite, led by Boris Johnson, was created in Oxford in the 80s. And I was there. I had a front row seat to witness it all. So I'm trying to trace how Oxford kind of formed and deformed these people, how the idea of Brexit was born there. And, you know, to kind of trace the path from there to here. I may now be the only British person who's hoping that Boris Johnson hangs on until summer, because I'd like him still to be around to help promote my book. But even if he goes, I think it's a real story of kind of class and power in Britain.
Yeah, and it's fascinating. And it's a lot of parallels because with the kind of divide, if it is such a kind of like an elite that are in power, they again, I don't know whether this is a fair comparison, I find it hard how they can relate to ordinary people as well, because I know the Tories in the last election, the red wall seats they called it, but I just find it like a sort of situation how this elite, or a very, very elite group who probably don't have a real understanding of ordinary working class people.
I think that's a good parallel, that if you kind of were eaten in Oxford and you were sort of catapulted straight into a big job in London, like people like Boris Johnson or David Cameron, I mean, how do you know what it's like, you know, to live on benefits or to be struggling for a job or to have a, you know, disabled daughter that you can't find care for? I mean, these people, you know, Cameron, for example, had a disabled son, very difficult, but he was able to, you know, he had the resources to navigate the system or to go private if he needed to. So yeah, I mean, the divide between them and ordinary people is similar, I suppose, to the divide between Barcelona footballers and ordinary people, except the Barcelona footballers have got there entirely on merit because you don't get to play for Barca based on what school you went to.
That's a fair point. On that note, we'll leave it. Listen, Simon, thanks a million for joining us. Your current book, you're having a really, really productive period of writing books. Your current book, Barca, is currently out, and your new book, Chums, How a Tiny Cast of Oxford Tories Took Over the UK. Kind of watch out for that. That should be out around April time in all good bookshops. But the book that we started off talking at the top of the show, Barca, really, really highly recommended. Really, really fascinating insight into Barca. Simon, thanks a million for joining us on the show, and the best of luck with the new book. And I suppose for you, hopefully Boris stays on for another few months.
Thanks very much, Patrick. Very kind.